Name's Everett Glover Sr. and live here in Hoonah. I enlisted. Well, when I enlisted, I was working in Oakland, California, but my home was here. I was going to be drafted, and like I said, my mother convinced me to join the Navy, keep the family tradition going. Eye-opener, for sure. Cut all my hair off and everything else. Things you're not used to. Marching around, taking orders. Not your normal lifestyle. Yeah, my company commander in boot camp, you know, the name of Music. Maybe that's how I can remember his name right now. Come to think of it, yeah. But that's it, just normal boot camp. March every place you go. Yeah, pretty active lifestyle growing up here, you know. All physical fit all the time. So boot camp was more or less a breeze. The young men in my company, you know, come from the city, they were struggling. Just keeping up, you know. Especially when they went on runs and whatnot. Here we're running around in the woods all the time. 2 years in Pearl Harbor and then 14 months in the Mekong Delta. Yeah, I remember flying into Tansanoot, coming in for a landing on a big jet, and they had to pull up because there was motor rounds going off in the Tansanoot Air Base. And we had to circle around until it got all clear to come in. And looking out the window, seeing the mud flying up in the air, you know, that's like being in a movie scene or something. This is the real deal, you know. They're rushing us into the building, you know. They didn't know if they're going to get small arm fire too or what, you know. But yeah, hurry here, hurry there. I had to spend a little over a week in Saigon in what they call Navy receiving until I got to all clear to go to my riverine unit. They were on maneuvers, so there's no mail, no nothing getting to them, you know. Colleton first, and then I transferred me to the Benoa. Yeah, the Engerman. Talked to a few of them. I was so tanned, suntanned, and late they'd start talking Vietnamese to me, you know. So I'd start talking Tlingit to them. Kind of blow their minds, you know. They'd switch to English. Where are you from? I'm from Alaska. They couldn't get over how far I come to fight for their country, you know. Yeah, that was kind of crazy. Well, in the first 6 months, we were at general quarters most of the time. We worked with 9th Infantry and served them and extracted them, you know, in combat zones and then riverboats escorts. And yeah, the first 6 months was pretty wild. That was the tail end of that Tet Offensive, you know. So, well, when I went to, it was 9th Infantry headquarters, you know, it was called Dong Tam. My first Liberty or R&R, whatever you want to call it, you know, in 6 months. And got there and we got under attack. And I had Mississippi's movement, got busted. So that's just the name of the game there. Automatic bust, you missed what they call ship's movement. No, but yeah. Navy, there was Army base, but Navy had an EM club and a mess hall and whatnot, you know, for the riverine and whatnot. And it got blown up twice while I was there. And motors coming in. And yeah, so a lot of people got hurt there. I take a lot of pictures and send them home to the countryside. And my mother just get very few, more or less stick to ones with any sort of landmarks, you know. It's confiscated. They didn't want to know where we were at. When we were in operation, you know, the mail would pile up until we moved back to a secure zone, you know, and then the helicopters coming with the mail. Well, they tried to feed us good, but by the time got upriver to us and everything, most of the time the meat was spoiled. Nice, big, fat, green steaks. I lived mostly on what they call lerps, you know, dehydrated food and lerp rats. Street vendors would watch, see, make sure they're eating it to the locals, you know, and we'd go try and dark meat. What's this, chicken? And they'd laugh, yeah, chicken. No darn well, it wasn't chicken. Didn't know what it was, though. Kept busy. We had generator watches and all that stuff, you know, when we weren't moving. When we were moving, I was on the main engines. And when we're secure, we had air conditioning units and everything, especially when we had the army aboard, you know. Groups from Taiwan and the Philippines, they'd come up river and perform, sing and dance for us. Some of them are pretty good. I didn't have no leave. Just while when I was on the destroyer, I had leave. I'd kind of time my leave to come home to go singing. Summertime, you know. Just 2 years I was in Pearl Harbor, yeah. When I was in Vietnam, and I never left there. They actually made me take a R&R into a bunk hotel in the country, R&R. I had to go down and escort an LST up, make sure they put our meats and everything back in their freezers because they several stops on the way up the river, you know. Usually they brought out whoever was first, you know, and brought out the meat and left it. And then they dig in there till they got to what was going to that one special unit, you know, and a lot of times they wouldn't put everything back in. So we had to go there and stand right there and, hey, that's our meat. Went to Guam, the Philippines, New Caledonia, I don't even know what it's called now, by India, you know, Sri Lanka now or something like that, I can't remember. Port Louis, Mauritius, Albany in Western Australia, Sydney, New Caledonia, Tarawa, we made a big loop. We spent about 6 months in the Indian Ocean. Got an international missile testing range there. We'd monitor the Russian missiles. Well, Australia, they got kind of a weird accent. Fun trying to communicate with them. New Caledonia, they talk French there in Port Louis, Mauritius, French. You go to start trying to buy some clothing or whatever, you know, well, you have a heck of a time. They're speaking French to you and you're speaking English, you know. Hold up what you want, put it there, and hold your wallet open, they'll come take what money they want, you know. I always had an exchange aboard ship, yeah, get francs. People would come aboard and exchange money for us to the local money, yeah. Yeah, all the different places we went to, I'd send my mother coins and bills, you know, some of them paper bills are bigger the denomination, the bigger the bill. But it was fun. My granddaughter found all the coins later on. She's small, and we went to a store. She wanted something. I can't remember what it was. And I told her, put it up there, babe. I'll pay for it. She said, Grandpa, I got money. And she had all them 400 coins. Where the heck she found them, I don't know. But that was good memories about being overseas, you know. And 14 months went by pretty fast for not going any place, you know. I was on small ships, you know, there was only 117 men on the destroyer escort, about 100 or less than 100 on that APB. Everybody knew each other, you know, everybody knew each other and got along good. I guess it was the big ships, the aircraft carriers and whatnot, where they had problems, you know, or that's what I heard anyway. I know. Well, a friend of mine here, oh, you probably interviewed him, Harvey Lindon. Him and his brother were on the same aircraft carrier. I don't know if he told you guys this or not. He didn't even know it until he got a letter from his mother. He said, do you see your brother very often? You know, so where is he? He's on the same ship. And Harvey worked up in the air wing, and his brother was down in the machinery rooms. You know. Yeah, both of them didn't even know they were on the same ship until they got word from their mother, you know. That's a big ship. I seen it come into Pearl. Where I served is what they call the rice bowl. Where they grew rice, you know. That's what the North Vietnamese wanted, too. That's like such a big battle over it. Food keeps the soldier going. But yeah, other than that, you know. Look forward to getting out and coming home and go fishing, hunting. Little sampans, yeah. Pretty efficient. Seen one with a car engine on it. A little sampan where I think you get up and go. Oh, a bunch of young Vietnamese on there, you know. It'll be six. They had to put pontoon on it. I think it torqued from the engine, I think, you know. They got that long shaft with the propeller on it, and they turned the whole engine to steer. But, yeah, that was. It brought out a bunch of laughs, and all the guys could see them go whizzing by, you know. They were hooting and hollering to them. Must have been their first ride on it, having lots of fun, you know. They're all sampans, you know, that's what they used on the rivers. Yeah, they used to come out and try to ambush, and they learned better, you know. Mostly AK-47 and some sort of machine gun, you know. But mostly hand rifles, you know, AK-47s, stuff that they confiscated from the U.S. military, too, you know, RPGs. Well, they usually got bowed out of the water, you know. They're pretty soon they wouldn't attack no more. So, yeah, that they had that bad habit of floating mines, command mines down the river, too, you know, we'd be anchored up and they'd float down. And that they had bid boats. Found out the hard way they had to use bid boats to drag a chain with blades on it, cut the command wires to the floating mines, you know, they tie it up to a piece of tree, float it down the river, get right next to you, they detonate it. So they had bid boats, what they called them, bid boats. They could just go around the whole riverine unit, dragging chains, three or four of them, you know, and they'd throw concussion grenades overboard, too, for swimmers. Them concussion grenades would blow up, I don't know, like a carp or something. It looked like a big herring. And the Vietnamese would come and grab it. It was too big to get in their little boats, so they put a line around the tail, and they tow it, you know. And they'd be giving us the high sign, you know, they were happy. They're big fish, holy. But the concussion grenades would blow one up every now and then, and they'd come floating up. You see a big race, sandpans, go get it, you know. You see a lot of people fishing, you know. Yeah, there's always some in sight, you know, in the fishing. But yeah, no, I never ever seen them catch any big ones. They look like just drinking lines, you know. They'd have a line on a piece of wood, you know, and you could see them when they're quitting, they'd be winding it back up again. Yeah, that water is so dirty, and put your hand in the water, you couldn't see your fingers, you know. So it couldn't see any. Just them big, like a carp or whatever they are, you know, night, bright and shiny. They come to the surface and you can see them. See guys make a mistake and they end up dying. That's what was in my mind. Yeah, I seen guys. See one guy painting leprechauns on the superstructure of a PBR, you know. He was first class and he was doing a good job. Everybody's admiring their little leprechauns, and he backed up to admire him, check out his work, you know, and he tripped and fell over backwards off the bow. And when the river current took him under, a whole line of other boats behind it, and never did see him again. They found his body several miles downriver. Vietnamese had cut off his wedding band, his finger, and stripped him, you know, had gold teeth. They pulled them, too. Now there's no need for him to die like that, you know. Just a mistake. Another time when we had the 9th Infantry aboard, they were moving out, and another bunch was going to come in, and one of the Vietnamese, here he was about Viet Cong. He put a whole bunch of Claymore mines right above a magazine down in the birthing area for the Army. And ship personnel had to go through there and check it, and they found it. That Vietnamese was running down onto the pontoon to get on the boat to get away, you know, and the other guys, the guy on guard duty and ramp there, he shot him running away, you know. And the boy, that thing went out, probably would have blew our ship up, you know. Whole bunch of Claymore mines, he made his own homemade mine, you know. Well, once they move all out, you know, that was, they're like, what they call Kid Carson's, like, scouts, you know, the Vietnamese, and their birthing area. They had to go in there and search it. That's how they found it. And they moving out, you know, after they moved out, that's when they searched. And they knew they searched, too, you know, this other guy can try it anyway. He saved up 9th Infantry a whole bunch of Claymore mines, you know, stockpiled them. But lots, they did. Well, especially that first 6 months, you know, they'd come under attack quite often. I used to help load the 40-millimeter press clips when we were at anchor. The big guns can shoot pretty fast. Yeah, in World War II, they were anti-aircraft, yeah. The same gun and two barrels. Couldn't keep up with them. Passing ammo, no. Two round clips, fast as you could go. You're still behind. But yeah, other than that, I watched a F-4 Phantom go down. Just right by Dong Tam. Just they drop a napalm, boom, boom, and it came down, and all of a sudden, big ball of fire down the timber line a ways, you know. Boom, I must have got shot down. A whole bunch of helicopters right around here, right, real quick. But that's, they call it Zapper Point, right across the river from Dongtan. And here the Viet Cong had a whole bunch of a big tunnel system there into the river. I found that out later. Yeah, they attacked our riverine unit there, and the next morning there wasn't a tree standing on that point. Shot them all down, all the riverboats. A lot of firepower there. The next morning, yeah, it was pretty amazing to look at. But other than that, you know, Vietnamese people were happy we were there, most of them, you know. I left Saigon in silk shirt and slacks. We had to fly to Japan, Yokota Air Base in Japan. And there was snow on the ground there in March. Man, we had to get off the plane so they can clean it, you know. And man, by the time I got into the building, I couldn't even hold a half a cup of coffee. It was spilling out, shaking. Tough way to get used to the cold again. From there, we flew to Hickam in Hawaii, spent the night there in Hawaii, and then Clark Air Force Base in Travis. Clark was in the Philippines, Travis in California. We had to get off there and go down to Regular Airlines, and that's where all the protesters spit at us and everything else. You know, had more hard time back in the United States than any place. All the protesters right at the gate there. Kind of a bad welcoming home business, you know. Yeah, but yeah. That's about it. Yeah. I used to have one, you know, I lost, over the years, lost trust, you know, I guess, from California. He actually went by here on a cruise ship and called me. Well, he called my son Glenn first, you know, because he had seen Glover. Yeah, the old landlines them days. They're up in Skagway or Hainsey, looking through the phone books, and he seen Glover, so he called. That was my boy Glenn. Glenn gave him my number, and he called when he was cruising by Icy Straits, you know, going to Glacier Bay. It was good to hear from him. That's the last time I ever heard from him. He was a professional barber when we were in the Navy, before he went to the Navy, you know, and then when he cruised by here, he was into real estate. I guess that's how he could afford to take a cruise, you know. I went fishing. My brother-in-law tried to talk me into going to work because I would have had seniority in my interim on a ferry system, you know. He said, Everett, your 4 years in the Navy will count. I don't know. I'm going to go out and make some real money. I'm going to go fishing, you know. That's how stupid I was. I could have been retired now if I went to work for the ferry. Never thinking, you know. At the time, to go fishing seemed real important. That's all I grew up doing, you know. But yeah, that's all I got. I don't know. You know, like I said, yeah, a lot of it, forgetting. I never ever dwelled on it, you know, my service time. More or less tried to push it out of my mind. Other than that, yeah, no. I had a hard time sleeping in my first home, you know, nightmares. But eventually those went away. Sleep with my kids.